Hello, hello, hello. I'm Dr. Vivian Lowe, and you're on VLMD Rounds, a podcast on medical science and tools to optimize your health. Now, I regularly do live stream events where I answer listeners' questions, and you can find the event schedule on my website, vivianlowemd.com, vivianlowhmd.com. It was at my very first live stream event that Mr. Brown Coat Blue made a request for an episode. And so, Mr. Blue, you had requested that I talk about fructose. And so this episode is for you. Let's go. With regards to fructose, it's not so common these days, but a few years ago, it was still pretty common to hear patients tell me how they were referred maybe to a nutritionist or to a dietitian because of pre-diabetes or diabetes, or maybe their primary care doctor just felt like they needed to lose some weight. And the nutrition consult often would tell them that it was fine for them to eat fruit, just have plenty of fruit, it's good for you, and hey, fruit doesn't raise insulin, it's not like glucose, so don't worry about it. Now, of course, we know that that's not true. So the first thing I want to say is that when you consume fruit, then the main sugar that we think of in fruit is fructose, F-R-U-C-T-O-S-E, and that fructose can be converted to glucose in your body, and then, of course, glucose can elicit an insulin response, right? Also, glucose can be converted to fructose. So it can go both ways in your body. The fructose can go to glucose, the glucose can go to fructose. So it's not really true that if you eat fruits, you will not have an insulin response. That fructose can be converted to glucose and you can get an insulin response. All right, as we said, it is the sugar that we find in fruits, and it's also part of table sugar. So table sugar, as you know, is made up of glucose and fructose joined together, right? It's a disaccharide. And after digestion, of course, you have those two units broken up and you have glucose and fructose in your gut. So we can get fructose from consumption of table sugar. We can also find fructose in processed foods in the form of high fructose corn syrup. Now, in table sugar, well, one molecule of glucose is combined or bonded to one molecule of fructose. In high fructose corn syrup, we can have actually 55% of that solution be fructose. And that's the average reported. And actually in soft drinks, in sodas, right, the average amount of fructose you have, that's about 59% fructose in those drinks. And in some of the big brand name colas, you could get as much as 65% fructose. All right, so anything in soft drinks, in beverages, colas, that kind of stuff, juices, all fructose, right? And you can also find fructose in other processed snacks and desserts. A lot of the granola bars that people buy as a snack, also pastries, baked goods, especially if they have dried fruit in them, right, will have a high fructose content, honey, of course, and also agave nectar. So those are some of the sources of fructose in terms of your food. Now, what happens after you eat the fructose? Well, obviously, after it's been processed and digested, especially if you've had table sugar and it's been broken up, now you have fructose in your small intestines. And there are special transporters that take fructose into the cell. So they're part of the glucose transporter families, and these are the GLUT5 transporters. So GLUT5 transporters are specific for taking fructose into cells. We can find GLUT5 in intestinal cells. We can find GLUT5 in the liver. We find GLUT5 in the kidney, testes, brain, muscle, adipose tissue. Muscle and adipose tissue, not a whole lot, right? So primarily right now, we're going to focus on the gut, the kidney, and also the liver. So we're in the gut, in the small intestines, and GLUT5 is taken in by the intestinal cells. And what they can do actually is convert that fructose into glucose. So essentially, they're going to take that fructose and use it for gluconeogenesis. So some people don't realize this. We often just think of the liver as the main organ involved in gluconeogenesis. But actually, we have some important contributions to gluconeogenesis from the intestines and also from the kidneys. So we have these intestinal cells taking in the fructose and using it to make glucose, right? Now, obviously, it can do that to a certain extent. But if we overload our system with too much fructose, that's going to be too much for your intestinal cells to handle. And there is going to be a spillover. So in the first place, it's useful because that fructose can be used to make glucose in times of starvation, in times of fasting. So in an overnight fast when you're sleeping, right, we could use that fructose and convert it to glucose. But if there is too much, then we have the excess fructose spilling over to the liver and into the large intestines. So let's focus on the colon first. So we have now the excess fructose passing into the colon. It can actually be fermented by the gut bacteria there, right? And this leads to increased gas formation and bloating, and people become very uncomfortable with these GI symptoms because of this excess fructose. In addition, these gut bacteria can use that fructose and convert them to metabolites, mostly the short chain fatty acids. And one of the short chain fatty acids is acetate. Acetate is really a source of acetyl-CoA, right? And this acetyl-CoA, as it piles up, can become a source for fat formation in the liver. So that's one thing that can happen if we bypass, if the excess fructose goes into the large intestines, all right? We get this bloating, we get these symptoms, but we're also making a lot of acetyl-CoA for the liver use for fat formation. Now, we have conditions, and these are hereditary conditions, where people are born without the enzymes for metabolizing fructose, right? That's a hereditary fructose intolerance. And this you actually will diagnose pretty early, because once the baby is weaned off breast milk, for example, and is introduced to foods that contain fructose, so anything that has sugar in it, because again, sugar is glucose and fructose, or fruit or juice or anything like that, then they really start to become quite ill. They have a lot of nausea and vomiting, and they have episodes of hypoglycemia. They may even have seizures as a result of that. And they have liver damage, so they may be jaundiced and so forth, right? These are really people who are born with this hereditary condition, and they have to, for the rest of their lives, just really avoid fructose, in their diets. But we also have dietary fructose intolerance, and I think this may be more common than most people realize, because I think people don't realize how much fructose they're consuming in their diets. So sometimes patients will come and they will report eating a very healthy diet, but they have a lot of bloating and discomfort. And when we dig in deeply, we find that maybe they're just having too much fructose, and withdrawing that or decreasing that load helps with the symptoms. Okay, so that's fructose in the intestines. And then I said the excess fructose can also go to the liver, right? The spillover of that fructose can enter into the portal circulation, and this shunts directly to the liver, and it doesn't hit the systemic circulation. So it goes directly to the liver, and it can have its effects there. Before we talk about the liver, let me just talk about the kidneys. Now, in the renal tubules, right, we have the GLUT5 transporter as well. And it's a similar situation there. We're taking that fructose and we're converting it to glucose in the process of gluconeogenesis. And again, this is very useful in times of fasting, overnight, for example, or maybe even in starvation, all right? So with the kidneys, we do have, you know, a not insignificant contribution to gluconeogenesis when someone is in the fasted stage. All right, that's in the kidneys. Now let's go to the liver. Okay. So what's interesting in the liver is how fructose is metabolized. So a lot of times people will ask me, well, what's the problem with fructose then? What's so special about it? So in order to give you an idea, I'm going to use a little analogy, all right? We're going to have a scenario where maybe you had a high school reunion, right? And a dinner with all your friends from high school. And then after dinner, someone says, hey, why don't we hang out a little bit more? Let's go to this club. It's got a good reputation, rave reviews. We can hang out there and have a good time. So everyone decides that's a great idea, right? And it's just around the block. We'll all head out there and spend some time together there. So maybe 20 of you decide you're going to go to this club, and we'll call it Club Hepatocyte, all right? So Club Hepatocyte is right around the corner, and all of you head there, and you're hoping to get in. Now, when you get there, you see a long line. And just like any other club, there's a bouncer right at the beginning of the line, right? And he is the one who is deciding who gets in or doesn't get in. Now, this bouncer, his name is actually phosphofructokinase, and that's abbreviated to PFK. But nobody calls him that. It's quite a mouthful. So we'll just call him Boris, aka PFK. Okay? Boris the bouncer at Club Hepatocyte. So Boris is standing there, and he's, you know, basically looking at everyone in line and taking each person one at a time and deciding on when they can enter into the club. Now, you know how when you go into clubs, they either stamp something on your hand or they give you a little tag so that people know that, you know, you were allowed to go in, right? Maybe they checked your ID to make sure that, you know, you were of age and you could go in. So they tag you in some way that says, okay, we've kind of screened this person and this person's legit and can go in to the club. All right, well, at Club Hepatocyte, they don't use the stamp. They don't use the little bands that they put around your wrist. What they do is they have these little badges, right, with P's on them, okay? And these are special badges. So if Boris lets you in, right, you get tagged with this badge, okay, that has the P on it. And, you know, once you have that, you are inside Club Hepatocyte. But you can't leave until you give up your badge. Okay? So that badge keeps you in Club Hepatocyte. And if you want to leave, you have to give up your badge and then you can leave. Okay? So we have this line. People are waiting. And one at a time, Boris, he's a stern guy. He doesn't smile. He's like, you, in. Okay? And doesn't make eye contact. He's just all about business. Get in. All right? And as people are going in, he hands them a badge and tags them. And then next. All right? Now, you know how clubs are. They have all these rules and regulations for safety, fire rules. So they're not allowed to let, you know, everyone in. There's a certain capacity. Okay? So Boris, okay, being Boris, is keeping tabs. So he has a little clicker and he's counting. And plus, you know, he's only got a certain number of those badges to hand out, right? So once he's used them up, he really can't give anyone else another badge until someone else leaves. Okay? So he's paying attention and he's making sure that the number of badges that he has matches, you know, however many people are allowed in, and he doesn't allow more than that. So he's keeping close tabs there. All right, so you and your 20 friends are looking at this and assessing the situation and realizing, oh, it's going to take forever for us to get in because the line is winding around the block. Boris is taking his time. He won't bend the rules, right? And he's checking those badges and making sure that, you know, it matches, right? So someone says, you know what? We'll never get in. It's cold out. Why don't we go to another club? Why don't we go to the club on the other streets, just around the corner? We can all walk there, right? And I heard it's just as good, maybe even a bit more fun. And let's give it a shot. So everyone says, yeah, why not? Let's all do that rather than stand in line, okay? So you all head over to this other club. And this club is just called Club Liver Cell, okay? Club Liver Cell, there's no line there. But when you peek in through the entrance, you can see, ooh, there's lots of people in there. And they seem to be having a ball, okay? Now, the doors are manned by another bouncer, and his real name is ketohexokinase. You know, sometimes people call him fructokinase, but, you know, that's really, again, not a great name to use, not easily, memorable for people. And so he goes by the name of Freddy. So Freddy's manning the doors there, and Freddy is very different from Boris. Freddy's a fun guy. Freddy has a big smile on his face. He's a people pleaser, right? And so he's saying hi to everyone, very laid back, right? Hi, yeah, how you doing? Yeah, in. Oh, how many of you? Oh, 20? Oh, don't worry about it. You can go right in. Yeah, didn't see anything. All right? So he's letting everyone in. Yeah, Joey, why not? Yes, bring all your friends. So everyone gets to pile in and you're all excited. You're like, woohoo, now we can go party, right? Now, same principle in Club Liver Cell. You get tagged, right, with these badges, okay? This is the new thing. So instead of giving you a stamp on your hand, they like giving out these badges. So, but Freddy is very loose and free with these badges. Yeah, have some. Here, take a whole batch, right? And he's really not paying attention, not like Boris. Boris was counting, clicking his little clicker, right? Making sure that it matched. But Boris is very different from Freddy. And Freddy's just like, yeah, come on in here. Take these badges and go. Okay. Once you enter, ooh, it's a party. Okay. People are dancing. They're swinging from the chandeliers. It's a little wild there, right? And there are people up on the glycerol bar, right? And there they're hooking up with fatty acids and making triacylglycerols. There's another batch going into the room towards gluconeogenesis, and they're making lots of little glucose molecules there, you know? So it's lots of stuff going on in Club Liver Cell, and plenty of people keep coming in, all right? And remember, Freddie's not paying attention to those badges he's handing out, and at some point, he runs out of badges. Oops, because who's counting, okay? All right, so what does any of this have to do with fructose, right? Well, glucose is actually processed similar to what happens in club hepatocyte, okay? Glucose is regulated by enzymes, and one of them is a specific enzyme, that was the Boris enzyme, right? That we're going to call phosphofructokinase now, or PFK. But you can still refer to it as the Boris enzyme. So Boris, okay, is tagging these glucose molecules as they come in with phosphate groups, okay? Tagging them with these badges. The P stands for phosphate, and it comes from ATP, okay? So, and Boris is keeping tabs with his little counter, and he wants to make sure that we don't use up those badges, okay? So when we find that, okay, there's a pileup of people inside club hepatocyte, right, and those little badges are running low, he holds off on letting the next glucose molecule in, okay? And this is part of a negative feedback loop, because as we see pile up here, we're like, yeah, we're just going to hold off on letting the next few molecules of glucose in until we clear up this backlog here, right? So he's keeping tabs, right? But ketohexokinase doesn't do that, and ketohexokinase, or Freddy, is the enzyme that is used in processing fructose, okay? So fructose uses different enzymes. So with ketohexokinase, or Freddy, the Freddy enzyme, we're not keeping tabs. Everybody in. Here, take some of these phosphate groups. Who's counting, right? And as a result, we get a drop, a depletion of ATP, because remember, that's where the phosphate groups are coming from, right? And that really sets up a situation where we now signal to the cell to form uric acid, right? And uric acid can be very inflammatory, and it will promote storage, formation of fat in the liver, okay? I am going to reserve uric acid for a separate episode, but I'll just mention it here to show you the links with fructose, but we'll do an episode on uric acid separately, okay? But remember, when that ATP level drops in the cell and the cell realizes it, because it's always sensing energy, it says, uh-oh, and then we direct it towards this pathway to form uric acid. And remember, in Club Liver Cell, we had everybody just kind of having a great time, right? So basically, the fructose comes in and it can go down the glycolytic pathway and be made into glycerol and attach to fatty acids and make triacylglycerols, right? It can go down the gluconeogenesis route, right? Kind of reversing that glycolytic pathway. We can make glucose. We can take that glucose and make glycogen. We can have a ball. We can do whatever we want. We can go into the Krebs cycle, right? So it's doing all these things. And at the same time, it is actually regulating some genes, right? So that we upregulate these genes that promote formation of fat in the liver, okay? Lipogenesis in the liver. So it's also signaling at the same time to the cell to upregulate formation of fat, right? And that's the main problem with fructose, okay? Those bounces are really important, and they control the entry of these substrates into the cell. And you have one bouncer or enzyme that is regulating via a negative feedback loop and keeping count. And then you have one like Freddy who doesn't care, everybody in, you know, let's all have a good time, right? And that is the enzyme that's involved in fructose metabolism. Okay, so this is the main difference between glucose and fructose, right? So I hope it makes it clear, because sometimes people say, well, it's processed very differently, but we're not even clear what that difference really is. Okay. All right, now where shall we go? Yeah. Remember the GLUT5 again? Okay, besides those places that I told you you could find GLUT5. So the intestines, the kidney, the liver, the brain, testes, some in muscle, some in fat, right? We also find GLUT5 in tumors, right? So I think most of you have heard of PET scans. And these are really scans where first you inject your patient with radio-labeled glucose, right? And then you scan them and you look for where the glucose goes in the body. And that tells you where very actively proliferating tissue are, right? And likely that's where the cancer is. So when we do PET scans, we find that only 45% of primary tumors with metastases, right, are positive, with this PET scan. So, right, what are the other tumors utilizing? And when we look at human malignant tumors, right, and we look at GLUT1 in those tumors, because GLUT1 is in all cells, and you have GLUT1, you bring glucose in. You actually see GLUT1 upregulation in only 87 out of 154 of human malignant tumors. So what are the other tumors utilizing? And it turns out that they actually will upregulate GLUT5 so they can take in fructose, right? And we've seen this very clearly in lung cancer, adenocarcinoma of the lung, also very much in breast cancer, colon cancer, right? And with the brain, especially in gliomas, you see a lot of GLUT5, you see high fructose levels. That's a poor prognosis for those gliomas. And also pancreatic cancer. Now, with pancreatic cancer, it's kind of interesting to me. I remember, early on in my career, I was working at a clinic and there was a nurse there and her husband got pancreatic cancer. And he was a very thin man. He was very health conscious, and all he did really was, he ate very little, but he ate a lot of fruit. And then he developed this pancreatic cancer. And the nurse came up to me one day and she said, I've been thinking and I want your opinion. My husband, all he would eat would be fruit, and he got pancreatic cancer. And I was thinking, Steve Jobs, he got pancreatic cancer and he was a fruitarian. And I wonder if those things are linked. And at the time, I didn't know. And I said, I have no clue. But it was an interesting thought, and it stuck in my head. And turns out she was right that Steve Jobs was very much a fruitarian, and he drank a lot of fruit juices or ate a lot of fruit. I think that was really, at that stage in his life, what he ate. Okay. And when they were making a movie about Steve Jobs, there was the actor who was portraying him tried to use method acting, and so he would put himself in the role of Steve Jobs and actually try to live his life. And so he put himself on a fruitarian diet just to kind of see what it was like. And I believe he ended up with pancreatitis in the hospital. He was quite sick, right? So that stuck in my mind. And looking around, there does seem to be an association between high fructose intake and pancreatic cancer. Now, the nurses' health study that had 88,800 plus subjects in it. And what they found there was that fructose intake was the strongest risk factor for pancreatic cancer. So, yeah, we can find GLUT5 in all the tissues I mentioned, but we also see GLUT5 in many of these tumors. All right. Now, fructose also, I told you, group 5 is in the brain. And fructose can have its effects in the brain as well. In the blood circulation, you don't really have high concentrations of fructose. It's only about 0.01% of the glucose concentration. So there's far more glucose in your bloodstream, you know, than fructose, all right? Now, in the CNS, right, we have cerebrospinal fluid we call CSF. And this is a fluid that bathes your brain and your spinal cord, right? It just kind of, your brain and your spinal cord kind of float in this fluid called cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF. So CSF glucose concentration is 60% of what you see in plasma in your blood, right? But you actually have 20 times the amount of fructose in your CSF than in the blood. So really, in terms of the effects of fructose there, you know, we can imagine that it might be magnified in the brain. Okay. Now, I did mention, you know, that we can go from fructose to glucose, but your body can also take that glucose and make it into fructose in the polyol pathway, which I will discuss in a later episode, right? You also heard about the polyol pathway when I talked about advanced glycation end products. And you know, it's bad news, highly inflammatory, right? And speaking of advanced glycation end products, remember that fructose is also one of the most easily glycated sugars, right? Unlike glucose is an aldose sugar, whereas, you know, fructose is a keto sugar, has that keto group. So it makes those glycation events a lot, you know, more probable, okay? So fructose is very easily glycated, and you can gunk up all kinds of proteins and other, you know, molecules everywhere in the body. So we can have exogenous fructose, but we also, in different tissue, we can have endogenous fructose. And this is really fructose that's made from glucose, all right? Now, in the brain, fructose can stimulate the hypothalamus to make a hormone called vasopressin. Vasopressin, the other name for vasopressin is ADH, or antidiuretic hormone. And that name gives you a clue as to what it does, right? So vasopressin is really secreted in times of dehydration, right? And it's very good at sensing the osmolality in your blood. And when it detects that you're dehydrated, hyperosmolar in the blood, it goes, uh-oh, right? And we then secrete vasopressin in the brain, and this gets into your blood circulation. And when it gets to the kidneys, it sends a message to the kidneys to reabsorb as much water as possible. We're dehydrated, folks. Like, bring the water back in, all right? So your kidney is always filtering blood and making urine. But when you have high vasopressin, then what you're going to do is you're going to actually try to reabsorb as much of the water as possible, right? So that you keep that in the body. And the other thing that vasopressin does is it's involved with a number of other systems in your body, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. For example, that's your stress axis, right? So it can be involved in secretion of adrenaline and cortisol to raise your blood pressure, right? To constrict your blood vessels. Vasopressin itself can constrict your blood vessels. And it also interacts with the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. That, again, I will discuss in another episode, right? But just for you to know, that's a highly inflammatory system in your body. So vasopressin can be helpful because it's trying to protect you from dehydration on the one hand. On the other hand, it can have these negative effects, right? Now, the other thing that vasopressin will do is it can increase hepatic lipogenesis. it's going to signal to the liver, let's make some fat. And the reason for this is that actually when we oxidize fat, when we burn fat, the byproduct of that would be water. We get some water out of that. We call that metabolic water. And so it's useful to make fat and store water because, hey, you know, maybe there's a drought. That's why we're dehydrated. So it would be a good idea to store some water in the fat. And then when we need it at some point and we can't find a well or a lake or anything like that, we can burn that fat and use that metabolic water. So that's actually pretty smart, right? And really that's, you know, why we think camels have their hump, which is made up of fat, and they store that fat as a source of metabolic water for when they need it, right? When they're, you know, in a drought situation or they don't have access to water, they burn that fat and they use that water. So the vasopressin is saying that to your body as well. It says to the liver, I think we should make some fat. We have a water crisis here, a shortage. So, you know, let's make some fat, okay? And so it increases the formation of fat in the liver. And, you know, there have been studies, there's one that I just want to reference very quickly where they looked at overweight and obese subjects. And in this study, that you know, they divided them into two groups. And you either got glucose or fructose beverage that, you know, was about 25% of your total energy intake for the day. And you took this every day for 10 weeks. Right, so it was either 25% of your total caloric intake for the day coming from glucose alone or 25% from fructose alone for 10 weeks. Now, both groups did gain weight, but it was only the group that was consuming fructose that had increased liver fat, right? They had increased visceral fat, increased formation of fat in the liver, and that fructose had stimulated the vasopressin, so they did have higher vasopressin levels in their blood, and you know, as a result, they had increased fat formation. I have a very interesting story here. It's a patient of mine, and he had done very well. You know, he had metabolic syndrome, and we were helping him with that, and he had lost some weight as we were treating him. And you know, I'm very interested in body composition. So we dexed him at some point, and he was close to his metabolic goal. He still had some visceral fat that needed to be, you know, gotten rid of, but he had done a good job. And so I told him, you know, we're gonna focus on building more muscle at this point, get rid of the rest of that visceral fat and recomp, okay? So he went and did this resistance training and so forth, but he complained to his grower, his coach. He said, you know, I was hoping to lose a little bit more weight because I need to lose that visceral fat. My weight, I've been doing everything you told me and, you know, nothing's changed. It could be that maybe I've gained more muscle. So can we do another DEXA just to be sure? So this is only a month later. I usually don't do another DEXA in a month because it generally takes a little longer for us to see increase in muscle mass. I certainly have seen increase or decreases in muscle mass in a month. So with someone who has been sort of sedentary or they had an injury and they couldn't move, we've definitely seen reduced lean mass. And we've had cases, yeah, in a month where we've seen increase in lean mass, but it's not that common. So I usually don't check at the 1 month mark, but he was insistent and we said, okay, why not? We didn't know what was going on. So we did a DEXA on him. And what was striking was that when he did the second DEXA, so he had done one just to benchmark him, and then now 1 month later, he said, maybe I have more muscle because my weight's not budging, but I'm doing everything you tell me. His weight was exactly the same. No change in weight a month later. But that DEXA showed increased percent body fat, and also in all of that fat was visceral fat. Okay, that was really striking to us, and we're like, in 1 month? What the heck? So of course, he got called in for an interrogation. What are you doing? And he said, I'm following everything you told me. Everything, right? I haven't deviated. And you know, he's actually really good at logging and keeping track. So we believed him, but we're like, there's something that you must have been doing. So you have to think, right? What is different? And after a while, he said, you know, there's only one thing I can think of, but I don't think it would make a difference. I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, and this was in the summer. It was very hot. And part of his job is very physical. It was very hot and humid that month. And so he said, you know, I started making lemon juice. And all I did was just squeeze lemon, right? And then I added water and ice. But I didn't want to add sugar because sugar is bad for you. And so I put in agave nectar. You put in what? Agave nectar, because it's natural and it's healthy and it's not sugar. And I'm like, oh my God. Agave nectar, or agave syrup, is 85% fructose. That's more than any soda, any soft drink, any fruit juice. 85%, right? So it is not healthier. It's natural, I know. Everybody goes, oh, but it's natural. I'm like, listen, snake venom is natural, okay? Just because it's natural doesn't mean you can just take it. It doesn't mean it's good for you. And in this case, it was really harming him, but it was really striking that he was the same weight, but he changed his body composition, a bit more fat, and all of that fat was visceral fat, okay? Actually, you know, just thinking of this, I'm going to show his DEXAs in the next newsletter. So those of you who want to see the two DEXAs side by side, make sure, if you haven't already, subscribe to my newsletter on VivianLohMD.com, VivianLohMD.com. Go there, subscribe. I send out a newsletter every month, once a month. I don't have time to do more than that. So once a month, I won't be bothering you more than that, but I'll put that DEXA in the next one, okay, if you want to look at it. So, you know, that was a huge lesson. Just fructose alone, that was the only thing he changed, and we saw vast difference in two DEXAs, even though the weight was exactly the same. Now, I also want to bring up another phenomenon here. It's called Mesoamerican endemic nephropathy. Mesoamerican endemic nephropathy. And this is something that occurs in manual laborers throughout Latin America and Central America. So, you know, it's been described in these people who are doing manual labor, physical labor, under hot, humid conditions. So they're under physical and also heat stress, right? And these are really all young men in their 20s, in their maybe early 30s, very young, should be very healthy, right? In Nicaragua, 14% of the laborers there were found to have a GFR. That's a glomerular filtration rate, and it's a measure of kidney function. And they had a GFR of less than 60, which is bad, okay? So they have renal disease. 14% of those laborers. And in El Salvador, some of their laborers, the ones that worked on the coast, 18% of them had a GFR of less than 60, right? So almost a fifth of those laborers. That's a pretty high percentage. So these are generally plantation workers, again, under conditions of physical stress, manual labor, and also heat stress. Now, obviously, I told you, dehydration is going to stimulate the production of vasopressin, right? To kind of reabsorb fluids in the kidney. But if you are dehydrated and you try to hydrate with a fructose-containing beverage, oh, then you're really in trouble, right? Then you're going to really overstimulate vasopressin, and vasopressin can have damaging effects on the kidney at that point. Okay, now it turns out that the average American consumes about 54.7 grams of fructose per day. So almost 55 grams of fructose per day. But in Latin America, it's 99.4 grams per day, basically 100 grams of fructose alone per day. So you can imagine that some of these men, under conditions of heat stress, you know, it's hot, humid, and they've been working hard, and it feels really good to have a nice iced drink of, you know, a cola or some soda, right? And probably they're thinking, oh, I need some sugar as well because I'm working hard. I need to be doing all this manual labor. So this will help me get some energy as well. So it makes sense for them, all these people who are drinking the sports drinks as well, right? The energy drinks. And they're thinking, oh, yeah, you know, need some of that. No, you don't. Okay, unless you work in a plantation in Latin America, you don't. All right, so cut it out. No juice either. So you shouldn't be having juice even though you think it's healthy. It is not, because it's high in fructose. I see this in the dance world a lot too, because you know, you go to a dance class, you sweat a lot, you're working out hard, you're dehydrated a little bit, and especially in the summer, it's hot, humid, and then I see everybody bring out the juices because it's healthy. Right? Water, water, water. That's all you need. All right, so there was a study here. They looked at 12 healthy adults. This was a crossover study. And basically, what they did was they had them drink 2 liters of a fructose-containing soft drink after 4 hours of exercise. So they exercised them for 4 hours and then gave them 2 liters. Now, if you look at those big soda bottles, that's, you know, about 2 liters, okay? 2 quarts, almost 2 liters. So they gave them these big bottles of a fructose-containing beverage. And it turns out that their serum creatinine, so your creatinine is also a measure of kidney function, right? And if it goes up, then it really represents declining kidney function, okay? So what they notice is after 4 hours of exercise and drinking 2 liters of a fructose-containing beverage, the serum creatinine went up greater than 0.3 milligrams per deciliter in 75% of the subjects, okay? Now, there was already heat stress. So if you drank water, then 8%, we saw 8% of the subjects had this increase in creatinine. But if they drank a fructose-containing beverage, then 75% had declining kidney function as represented by that increase in serum creatinine. And it doesn't sound like much, 0.3%, but creatinine is funny that way. A small increase in creatinine actually represents quite a significant insult to the kidney. In other words, quite a great decline in kidney function. Okay, so that 0.3% is, 0.3 milligrams per deciliter is actually defining for acute kidney injury. So all these people, all they did was exercise for 4 hours, you know, maybe run a marathon, go for a long walk outside in the summer, and then you have some fruit juice, you have some soda, right? And you could be putting your kidneys into acute renal injury. And then, of course, you're increasing with that fructose load, uric acid as well, along with the vasopressin, and your stressing out your blood vessels, vasoconstricting, and making more fat. All right. So then I always get asked this question about, so are you saying, Dr. Lo, I shouldn't eat fruit. Okay, you definitely should not eat canned fruit. Anything that's dried, like dried fruit, dried, cranberries, raisins, that kind of thing. Okay, so you should not have dried fruit. Get rid of that trail mix, and no canned fruit. Now, in general, it seems that fruit is healthy. And this is really hard to get my patients to understand because it gets drilled into everyone's head. Fruit is good for you. It's healthy. You should have more fruit, right? And also, you know, when you make those recommendations to increase your intake of fruits and vegetables, guess what? Most people will increase the fruit intake because it's easy. A, you don't have to cook it. Secondly, it's yummier. You know, so all these people who go, well, tell patients to increase their intake of fruits and vegetables, they clearly have not taken care of patients because you know the patient's just going to increase fruit intake, right? Fruits and vegetables. Yeah, I got lots of fruit in, right? We've seen people, and you know them too, they buy a box of tangerines and they eat half the box. They eat the whole box in one sitting. They have a bunch of grapes gone in one sitting. Right? So when we tell people that it's healthy, then people feel like it's a free-for-all. We can just have as much as possible. Also, don't forget that most of the fruit that are grown today, not only are they grown out of season, they're genetically modified. They are bred and hybridized and modified to be sweeter than the original varieties. So much sweeter and humongous, right? Huge. So, you know, an apple today is almost like a bowling ball sometimes, right? So an apple today is different from an apple from 20 years ago when the apple was tart and wasn't, you know, like a melon, right? So the size of the fruit and the amount of sugars, because they're bred a certain way, right? That also has something to do with it. And then people will cook and they'll make apple pie, right? They make cherry pies and they don't consider that source of fructose as well. Jams and jellies, they don't consider, right? So in a lot of pastries where they have, you know, cherries baked in and so forth, that's a high fructose load. So people don't realize how much fructose they're actually consuming. I grew up in Singapore, and that's the equatorial tropics. Singapore is 2 degrees north of the equator. So let me tell you, it is hot and humid year-round, right? And we have plenty of tropical fruits that are extremely yummy. When I first came to America, you know, people asked me, well, what's your comfort food? And I was like, oh, what does that mean, comfort food? So that concept was already hard to grasp. But then I thought, I think they mean just your favorite food. So I said, mangoes. And they're like, mangoes? That's kind of weird. But, you know, of course mangoes. I loved mangoes because of candy, right? They're so sweet, especially the ones in Southeast Asia, right? And I didn't eat one mango. Who ate one mango? You'd have a mango tree, you ate until you were full and sick, right? So we ate a lot of tropical fruit. And then, you know, people go, well, all these people in Asia and where you come from, they're all skinny. So why do they have metabolic syndrome? It must be a genetic thing. And I'm like, oh no, all those skinny people, they're eating fruit because it's healthy. And I grew up there, fruit in the morning, fruit at lunch, fruit juice, sugar cane juice. Ooh, remember that? Sugar cane juice. Right? And fruit at dinner, fruit for dessert, right? And we had the sweetest fruits, papaya and mango and, you know, pineapple, all of those. And you put them all together, right? So, I mean, there's no proof, but I definitely saw an overconsumption of fruit growing up in Southeast Asia. And I think that it does have some contribution in these hot and humid workplaces to metabolic syndrome. Okay, so let's do our wrap up for now, right? We talked about fructose today and how it's really brought into the cell via the GLUT5 transporter. And then we looked at all the sites where you find GLUT5, and that's primarily the intestines, in the liver, in the kidneys. You also have, you know, some in the brain, you have some in testes, you have some in muscle, you have some in fat. Actually, I forgot to mention placenta. Now, placenta, kind of interesting there, because fructose is particularly important in early stages of development for the fetus. Generally, in those early stages, it's a slightly hypoxic environment for the fetus, and the fructose seems to be protective. It's also very important for organ development of the fetus. So placenta has GLUT5. And then we talked a little bit about how in the intestines and in the kidney, the fructose that's brought into those cells will be converted to glucose, and they contribute to gluconeogenesis in the fasted state, right? Any excess fructose in the intestines will spill over either to the large intestines, to the colon, or to the liver. In the colon, it can be fermented by gut bacteria, and this can cause gas and bloating and so forth. And we also make these short chain fatty acids, and acetate is one of them. So this is a source of acetyl-CoA, which can contribute to hepatic lipogenesis. The other thing I didn't say was that fructose in the colon also, especially in large amounts, disrupts tight junctions. So these colonic cells are kind of abutting each other very tightly so that they don't let in any endotoxins or bacteria, right? That's their way, one way to protect you from the bacteria that are in the colon. Well, when you have a high fructose load, you actually disrupt those tight junctions, and so you loosen it and you have gaps between the cells, and this allows for endotoxins and bacteria to enter into your body, a condition that we call leaky gut. So fructose can promote that as well. Now, any excess fructose, besides going into the colon, it gets shuttled off via the portal circulation to the liver. And in the liver, right, the main thing is that there is a difference in the enzymes regulating the metabolism of glucose and fructose. And with fructose metabolism, there really isn't any negative feedback loop to the entry of fructose into the cell, right? And we very quickly deplete the ATP in the cell as we're phosphorylating the fructose when it comes in. And once we have that transient drop in ATP, that actually starts us on the pathway to uric acid formation, and uric acid can increase inflammation and increase also formation of fat in the liver, right? We also talked about how fructose can stimulate the hormone, the secretion of the hormone vasopressin, or antidiuretic hormone, in the brain. And the effect of vasopressin is to signal your kidney to reabsorb water, but it also signals your liver to form fat, to store water in the form of fat, to be used as a source of metabolic water in dehydration. So vasopressin can contribute to metabolic syndrome and increase in liver fat, right? So we looked at where we can find the fructose and where we're consuming it in the diet. And in terms of my recommendations for my patients, the fruits that we recommend for our patients in limited amounts would be the berries. So that would be the raspberries and the blackberries and that kind of thing, right? Because they really have sort of the highest nutrient value for the and the lowest sugar, you know, sort of content. So they're the best match in terms of keeping good metabolic health. So that's our recommendations. I don't recommend tropical fruits. I myself do not consume tropical fruits at this point in my life. Now, people will say that's kind of extreme and so forth, but you know, that's a personal choice. My last word on this for fructose is that F is for fructose, and F is also for famine, and fructose is a signaling molecule for famine in your body. Okay, so when you have increased fructose in your body, you're essentially signaling your body, famine, help, we need to store fat, right? We need to prioritize storing fat, and we got to store some water as well, because chances are we'll need it too, right? So fructose is a storage signal to your body. And if you are a bear, you should definitely indulge in your fructose. Go for the overripe fruit, you know, to prepare for hibernation in winter. It's a bit too late now because we're into the winter. But if you're a bear, you can probably still rummage through the trash and find some high fructose corn syrup in people's trash, right? Honey, that kind of thing. So if you're a bear, go for it. You're going to need it. If you identify as human, you might prefer to lower the fructose intake, or really just kind of minimize it as much as possible. That's my final word on it. Okay, so don't forget to join me on my live stream Q&A sessions. Check out the event schedule on my website, vivianlowmd.com. And if you found this helpful, please support my channel by liking and subscribing. And right now, signing out from VLMD Rounds, I'm Dr. Vivian Low, and I sing The Body Electric. Bye.